Is your cloud bill out of control? Cloud Zero is building a platform that will let you analyze your cloud investment faster than ever before. You'll get accurate, granular visibility into your total cloud spend without the typical pitfalls of legacy cloud cost management tools like endless tagging or clunky Kubernetes support. Cloud Zero is how cloud-driven companies gain more financial control and predictability by driving immediate and ongoing savings. You can answer questions like, how can I save 20% of my cloud bill right now? Who are my most expensive customers? How much does this specific feature cost our business? Join companies like Rapid7, Drift, and SeatGeek by visiting cloudzero.com/cloudcast to get started today. Again, please visit cloudzero.com/cloudcast to get started today.
Cloudcast Media presents from the massive studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is The Cloudcast with Aaron Delp and Brian Gracely, bringing you the best of cloud computing from around the world.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are. Welcome back to The Cloudcast. We are coming to you live from the massive Cloudcast studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hope everybody is doing well. Last show of January 2023. Wow, the year is already starting to move past us. Hope everybody's doing well. Hope everybody's starting to adjust into their 2023. And, you know, I know here in North Carolina, the weather is still very, very strange. Some days it is, warm. Today, for example, it is very warm. It's shirt sleeve weather, probably 60 degrees or so. Other days it will be 10 degrees. We've gotten some weird stuff. So it's still that time of year where everybody's sort of adjusting to what's new. The weather is still a little bit weird. We have short days, which are no fun. But anyways, we're getting into new stuff. So last show of the month. One thing for those who have listened for a long time, this year, we're going to do eight shows a month. So we're going to do one Wednesday, one Saturday every week. If we happen to have weeks that have like a five in there somewhere, so like there's an extra Wednesday or an extra Sunday, we're just going to take a break on those weeks. It helps us a little bit. Gives us a little bit of flexibility certain times on weekends. It gives us a little flexibility as far as finding guests and finding topics. So you will still get lots and lots of shows, not to worry, but going forward, this month was kind of an eight show month. I think February will be an eighth show month. But, as we get into certain weeks, just sort of have that in the back of your head. They'll all show up in your podcast player as you normally expect them. So what we're going to do on today's show, today's Sunday Perspective show, is we've spent the last few weeks kind of starting the year, a lot of look ahead to 2023 shows on the Wednesday show. Great, great feedback from everybody. Thank you very much. Listens are already up like 30% this year. So not sure where all the new people are coming to from, but welcome to the show. Welcome to the podcast. And on the Sunday Perspective show, we have done a lot of kind of retrospective look backs at some things. We looked at Microsoft, we looked at VMware. We're going to do a little bit different today. I'm going to kind of get back to kind of a normal format or a common format for Sunday Perspectives. I'm going to try and connect two dots from some things that were part of my week. This was the first time in a long time I've been traveling. So, for those of you that know me, I used to travel a lot. Obviously, for a lot of us, COVID changed a lot of how much we traveled, especially if we were, working for types of jobs in which we were actively engaged with people, whether it was, customers or clients or events or whatever. So I haven't traveled in a long time for the day job. Also haven't presented in a long time for the day job. I've been doing some different stuff, more behind the scenes things, more operational stuff, and running a couple of teams as opposed to some of the stuff I did at previous jobs, which is different. It was really nice to get back out and be presenting again. But a couple of interesting things happened. So I had to give two presentations this past week to a couple of groups of people, very nice people, very smart people, but they were very cloud native. So in my day-to-day job, I spend a lot of time in the cloud native space. I happen to be kind of heavily involved with Service Mesh at my day job. And so I had a chance to present to two different groups. One group was more kind of press and media oriented. So they were looking for stories and kind of looking to understand trends and so forth. And then I had a chance to present at Cloud Field Day, part of Tech Field Day, Gestalt IT, Stephen Foskett's group. So really good, smart group of practitioners, but not necessarily people who every day, at least all of them, are doing cloud native all the time, right? Some of them are, some of them are doing it all the time. Some of them are very new in the space. Some of them are kind of, moving from data center to cloud. So again, an audience of people who, don't do in-depth cloud native every day, but are obviously interested in this space and so forth. So that was kind of part of the connecting the dots. It was, presenting a very new topic or new technologies in many cases, to a set of people who don't necessarily live with this every single day. And, people who, have a bunch of experience in prior technologies. So whether that's data center or virtualization or kind of more, kind of legacy monolithic applications, or, kind of are in the process of doing migrations to the cloud, but maybe aren't necessarily doing the day-to-day stuff. So point number one is going to be around, how do we talk to folks about new technologies? And then the second thing that was interesting, so I roll into San Jose Airport about 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. And usually these days, you're fairly close. You jump in an Uber or a Lyft or something. But for this one, I had a bunch of driving. The two different events were in two different locations. And so for that reason, I rented a car just because I knew the timing was going to be a little bit odd. I wanted to be able to kind of control, where I could get around to and so forth. And so I rented a car from Hertz. We've been renting from them for forever. They do a great job. Anyways, roll into the car place at the airport, and there are literally no cars. There's an entire floor of a parking garage, and there's no cars. And so I kind of walk around for a while, don't find anything. And I go back to sort of the help desk, and I'm like, hey, what's going on? I'm expecting it to be like a Seinfeld episode where I made the reservation, but they didn't hold the reservation. And it turns out the guy says, oh, well, we do have one car available. And he kind of points me down a way, and I had sort of averted my eyes from that because I hadn't gotten the sort of high-end rental car. I'd just gotten like a regular standard-sized rental car. And he goes, no, you can take that one down there. And it turns out he points me to a Tesla Model 3, which is sort of, a new thing they do with rental cars. And, so in my mind, I'm like, oh, okay, it's a Tesla. I've had a chance to ride in a few Teslas, not a lot of them. Here in North Carolina, there are some, but it's not sort of Silicon Valley where it's everybody's common sedan. And so I'd ridden them before, but I'd never driven one before. And I've heard good things about driving them. And obviously we all know sort of about the technology and so forth. And so the guy gives me, first thing he does is he hands me a key, and I'm going to get into sort of the details of this. But anyways, the net of it was at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night, all I wanted was a car. All I wanted to do was jump in the car, drive 5 minutes to the hotel, go to bed. And the first thing that basically happened was I had no idea how to drive this car. And I'm going to kind of go into the details and connect the dots of that with kind of this presenting thing. But it was really, really interesting to take somebody who has driven for, many, many years, 30 plus years. I think I can drive anything and everything. I grew up in Michigan. I grew up around cars. We were the sort of, car manufacturing center of the world. I've driven anything and everything from vehicles to trucks to farm equipment to motorcycles to whatever. I've never, ever gone into a rental car place, no matter what kind of car they gave me, good, bad, or indifferent, and ever had to give one thought to how to drive the car, and literally had no idea what I was doing in this thing. And so sort of had to have this guy walk me through it. So I'm going to kind of connect the dots between those two things, between, presenting new technology to people who aren't necessarily familiar with it, and this other experience, which was essentially a person who has what feels like a bunch of experience in a domain, taking on sort of the next generation of what that domain looks like, and just being kind of confused and frustrated. And what are the both the real impacts of that and sort of emotional impacts of that? So I'm going to get to that after this long-winded introduction right after the break.
Are you struggling to keep up with the demands of managing and securing identity in your distributed enterprise IT environment? You're not alone, but don't let it hold you back. With Strata's Identity Orchestration Platform, you can secure all your apps on any cloud with any IDP, so your IT teams will never have to refactor for identity again. Imagine modernizing app identity in minutes instead of months, deploying passwordless on any tricky-old app, and achieving business resilience with always-on identity, all from one lightweight and flexible platform. Want to see it in action? Share your identity challenge with us on a discovery call, and we'll hook you up with a complimentary pair of AirPods Pro. Don't miss out. Visit strata.io/cloudcast. That's strata.io/cloudcast. We all know that running global-scale, multi-cloud applications is difficult and expensive, but being locked into a single cloud provider sucks. That's why our friends at Section created the platform for easy and cost-effective multi-cloud operations. Section actually makes it easier to operate multi-cloud than on your current single cloud. Applications run in the best locations for end-user performance, reliability, and security, and you get to focus on building your apps, not your infrastructure. Visit section.io/cloudcast to sign up for free with no credit card required. You can be running in under a minute. That's section.io/cloudcast.
And we're back. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, we're going to kind of connect the dots between, experiencing being on the receiving side of experiencing and learning about new technologies and being on the presenting side of presenting new technologies to people who, you know, have a whole bunch of experience in dealing with this stuff. And so I kind of hinted at it in the intro. I had to do these two things. On one hand, I had to present some technology. I had to present some products for my day job company that happened to be around cloud native and service mesh and API management and sort of this, you know, way that cloud native application is coming together and a bunch of stuff that we've talked about in the podcast and so forth. And, you know, it kind of got me thinking. So the audience on one hand, like I mentioned, a lot of press and media people, on the other hand, a bunch of practitioners. But again, neither one of them, would claim for themselves, and I'm not kind of trying to degrade them or sort of knock them down. You know, they were the sort of the first to say, like, hey, we get some of this, but we don't get all of it. And we don't live with this every day. And, we're trying to understand the transitions. And so really good conversations. But, you know, a couple of things kind of jumped out at me. So as I'm thinking about presenting this and as I'm presenting, you got a lot of questions. And again, these were forums in which you're asking folks to stop you and ask questions, right? So it was an educational, two sets of educational activities. It wasn't just intended to go, hey, I have 45 minutes, I'm going to get through these slides, which we've all sat through those presentations. And well, this was very much, you know, I'm going to present a little bit. We're going to talk about some things. I want you to ask questions. And it's okay to say, I don't know what's going on. And so there was a decent amount of that. And, first and foremost, you know, I applaud anybody who, you know, has the courage to say, hey, I don't know if this is a good question or a bad question. And I don't know if this is what people sometimes perceive to be a dumb question, but I'm going to ask it anyways, because if I don't understand this concept, if I can't get past this blocker that I have, I don't know that I'm going to get a lot out of the rest of this presentation, because some of these foundational things, I really have to ask that question. So, you know, you start thinking about like, what are the, you know, this is sort of a reading the room type of thing, but what experiences do the people in your audience, whoever you're presenting to, whether you're presenting to a room of people, a small table full of people, you're speaking at a conference, you're just talking to your friends, you're trying to explain to your colleagues and coworkers, what experiences do they have? Because I think not understanding that is going to be the first sort of stumbling block you potentially have, which is, do they have a bunch of experiences which are aligned to what you're talking about, or do they have a bunch of experiences that are really kind of diametrically opposed? Maybe they're entirely based on, where they grew up. Maybe it's entirely based on, you know, having spent years and years in a previous generation of technology. Maybe they were in a place in which, you know, the normal stuff that you would expect everybody to understand, they just were never exposed to it, right? You get this a lot of times when you meet people who maybe they're from rural areas and they go into the city, or they're from, you know, kind of urban areas and they go into rural areas, or they, go into a place where they don't speak the language, right? So, you know, that was one of the first things that jumped out at me was, okay, I thought I understood the experiences of these people. And as they were asking questions, I sort of realized, you know, I probably should have spent some more time up front, 5 minutes, 2 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever it was, doing some real baseline types of things in explaining what we were talking about, because the experience they had was front and center. And for the first 10 minutes or so of the presentation, they were sort of doing this context switching in their mind between, okay, that person's talking about something new and I don't really know what that is, but they're talking about it in a way that, you know, the previous experience I have is X. So in the case of both of these things, let me just kind of give you an example of what I'm talking about. We were talking about, you know, cloud native technology, which meant we were talking about containers and Kubernetes. And, you know, a lot of these folks may have had a little bit of experience with that, but they had more experience with, virtualization, things like VMware, right? Or even just, you know, maybe some basic cloud concepts like, well, I know AWS EC2. And so I think as we were talking about some of these early concepts in their mind, they were going, okay, that's a thing, but like, What did a VM do? Why would I need this new thing? Because I'm pretty sure the old technology already did that, right? And they eventually asked those questions, and it was like, oh, okay, great. Let me go back and talk about those things. Now, the second thing that came up was questions that were, hey, why are you doing this thing? Why are you doing things in this new way? Is there a reason why you've chosen to do it in this new way? And this sort of connects the dots between that presentation I was giving and jumping into this Tesla for the first time. So let me kind of give you some experience of this. So I went to the customer service desk. He said, yes, you're welcome to take that Tesla down there. It's the only one we have left. And I said, okay, fine. And he said, you know, have you ever driven one? And I said, no, I've never been in one. Well, I've been in one, but I've never driven one. And he goes, okay, great. So he you know, kind of him probably knowing from having experiences with other people, he keeps walking along with me towards the car. And I'm thinking, well, dude, I've done this hundreds, literally hundreds, if not thousands of times. I don't really need you to hold my hand. And we get to the car and he hands me the keys. And it's not keys. It's not a key fob. It's not one of those sort of remote control thing. It's, and again, I don't know from having not owned a Tesla or really kind of, you know, being intricate. So anybody who owns a Tesla, and if I'm way off on this and you're, you know, kind of gritting your teeth or, you know, yelling at your phone or something, apologize for this. This was the rental car experience. I'm expecting that it's probably similar to the owning experience, but probably has some differences. So anyways, he hands me a thing that looks kind of like your work badge, right? It's sort of this laminated thing, which I'm sure is for Hertz, you know, for so it doesn't get damaged, but it's just basically a card. And he goes, well, here you go. And I sort of looked at it and I went, okay, well, I don't know what to do with this, right? It was the first time with a vehicle I've ever thought like, I don't know what to do with this. And so he says, oh, well, you do this thing where you sort of swipe it by the door and that unlocks the car. And then it opens up the mirrors and it, you know, does some things. And I thought, okay, cool. That's kind of the way they do it. And everything about the Tesla is interesting because it's very clear that they had a design pattern in mind. They had certain design aesthetics and certain design patterns in mind, which were very much about being sleek, about being minimalist, about not, sort of an aesthetic like when Steve Jobs first talked about the iPhone in saying, you know, the old quote unquote smartphones, a Nokia phone or a Motorola phone or whatever it might have been, they were restricted and they had to have all these different models because the, you know, half of the real estate was taken up with the keypad, right? With the buttons. And, you know, so I'll put a link in the show notes for those of you that are younger. If you ever go back and watch the original Steve Jobs presentation of the iPhone, the introduction to the iPhone, there was a lot of moments in which he said, you know, this is different than you expect, but this is why we did it. And I think back to this now, and it was interesting kind of watching him walk through this because he does a masterful job of explaining this is the new thing, and this is why we did the new thing, and this is why this will be beneficial to you. And, you know, he also spent time, you know, kind of explaining, like, it's going to be a different experience. You're going to scroll through things. You're going to, you know, hold on to, you know, you're going to kind of push down on it. There's no button. You're going to kind of, you know, push your finger on it and a little menu will come up or whatever it might have been. But, it, you know, as I relate it back to this Tesla experience, I didn't have that. I didn't have that sort of Sherpa with me. I had this guy. And so he kind of told me a few things. And so I get in the car and I look down where the normal steering, you know, the ignition is or the button to start the car, as we have in most, you know, modern cars today, a lot of newer cars. And there's nothing there. And I said, okay, you got me. How do I start this thing? Because, you know, the other parts of the car seemed normal, right? There were seats and there was a steering wheel and there was a gas and brake. Nothing on the dash per se, right in front of me. But, you know, and he says, oh, well, you have to put this card in a certain place sort of on the console, if you will. And that will identify the car that you're in it and then you can start it. And I went, okay, well, that's kind of weird. I don't think I would have figured that out if it was the middle of the night. I would have had to go into the manual. And then the third thing was, okay, how do I make this thing drive? Because there's no stick shift. There's no sort of, a lot of new modern cars have sort of buttons to get you into different things. There's none of that. There's just the normal sort of turn signal. And then there's this other button and, you know, or this other sort of lever, I guess, on the steering wheel. And if you really looked at it, you could see there was like an R, N, and a D for reverse, neutral, and drive. But you couldn't see P because P is out on the end of it and you can't see it because it's behind the steering wheel. And so, again, I'm not trying to critique the design of it, but it was one of those things that, you know, for anybody who's driven for a very long time, you would have sat there for a while and gone, all right, I can't quite figure all this stuff out. And, you know, I'm not sure how to start this thing. So I could kind of go through a whole litany of stuff of, you know, what was weird about driving this car. And I'll spend a little more time maybe towards the end of this thing. But it brought me back to this thing of going, oh, okay. You know, we didn't establish why certain choices were made. We just sort of established that a new aesthetic or a new model or a new framework is being put in place, which is minimalist design. Everything is being kind of exported to this display, which again, the other thing weird about the display is the display is not in front of you, which keeps your focus straight ahead in the car. It's just off to your right. which again, maybe it's one of those things where, you know, the thought process was, well, 5 years from now, 3 years from now, 10 years from now, everybody will do will do automated driving, and it won't matter where the displays are because you won't have to worry about looking forward. The car will look forward for you. But as somebody who's used to driving a normal car, you know, a standard car, having certain things in front of you that don't divert your eyes, that's a weird thing. It left a weird, a little bit of sort of psychological uneasiness of like, I'm constantly looking over to the side to look at a map or to, you know, look at the speedometer or to look at, you know, how much battery's left, and I'm not focusing on the road, right? And so there's little things like that as well, just of like, you know, how do I do it? You know, psychologically, does this car do the same things I'm expecting? Does it feel the same way? And it brought me back to, you know, something that we had in the presentation we were giving, which was, you know, the product that we were talking about. We were walking through the product and we were talking about the technology and talking about the product and showing a user interface. And at some point we showed the user interface, which is a GUI. And we said, well, you know, this show, here's the things that you see in the GUI. Here's the default things you see. Here's the things that you get from drop-down menus. And then the person I was presenting with said, well, and one thing that's a little bit different about this is a read-only UI, right? Because our expectation is that in the environments in which this is going to be used, they are going to be more highly scalable. They're going to be more dynamic. And so you want to build sort of cloud native best practices around. You want to build automation around it. And, you know, the recommendation of the engineering team and the product team is you should use GitOps principles. And so you shouldn't be clicking through a UI to make a bunch of changes. You should be doing those changes through, you know, infrastructure as code types of things, or in this case, you know, deterministic things that you can then track to change control. And, you know, it was one of those kind of moments in which in talking, you know, in kind of watching the audience, you realized, okay, first and foremost, I may have to explain some things to you in terms of like, what does deterministic mean? What is infrastructure as code? If you come from, let's say, a VMware background where you're used to clicking around in vCenter, or you're used to clicking around in some sort of tool, you know, asking you to not have the ability to kind of control things from a UI might feel very much like me trying to drive that Tesla for the first time of like, where's the ignition button? Where's the thing? You know, you know, even simple things like in the Tesla, you know, would have loved the seat heater to work. Well, the seat heater did work. It just automatically came on, but then it turned off. And I couldn't, for the life of me, find through the bunch of menus as to where you turned it back on. And I'm sure there was a certain sense of that, like, huh, well, they've taken away control of me. And they've told me that the control is somewhere else. But in order to get that control back, I got to go learn some new thing. And maybe the learning thing is not that complicated, but it's still a learning curve, or at least, you know, it's not the default thing. It didn't give me the option to stick with an old way of doing default. It forces me to have a new way of doing default. And again, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, it's one of those important things that if you are, you know, standing in front of the technology, you're explaining the technology, or even if you're listening about these new technologies, you sort of have to ask yourself, like, why were certain choices made? You know, why did you choose to sort of leapfrog from what's common today to something brand new? You know, what's the reason for that? And more importantly, what's the value that we're going to get out of it as the people who are going to use and consume and have to maintain these technologies? Have you taken the time to explain that to me? And again, it was, you know, I'm not here to sort of argue were decisions made the right decisions? Were they the wrong decisions? Is it good or bad? It's just one of those recognition things of, you know, the people that are that you're presenting to, that you're educating, that you're exposing to these things, their learning curve is not going to happen in 5 minutes. It's not going to happen in 10 minutes. So you have to take the time to sort of go, okay, how do I make sure that they understand why the new technologies exist, why the choices were made, and then kind of gauge, are you frustrating people by taking away things or making things different, right? Are you frustrating them because in their mind things are missing? Are you creating some sort of emotional uncertainty in their mind? Like, oh, okay, well, if that thing's not there, and, you know, for example, oh, if that thing's not there in which I can, let's say, use the user interface, and I'm really used to doing that, and I know in the back of my mind, like, oh, I was supposed to learn that infrastructure as code stuff a while ago, but I keep putting it off. Like, am I going to be at risk at my job? Like, you know, how long is this learning curve going to be? Is it going to be 2 months? Is it going to be a year? Is it going to be a year and a half? You know, and it was, again, what the right answer to that is, you know, it all depends on the people, and it all depends on, you know, whether it's the right technology for them, and so forth. But you do create potentially these situations, if you don't address them up front, in which, you know, there's an uncertainty. And like in my case, in driving this car, like one of the things that concerned me was, so Teslas are interesting to drive, at least the setup that was in this car at the time. I think there's some configuration options to make it different, which, again, just the whole idea of like configuring your car through software is very interesting, and also just sort of unusual if, you know, again, you haven't sort of bought into the full cult of what a Tesla can do. And one of the things that was sort of interesting, but then concerning, but then you kind of figured it out, was you don't really use the brakes. You just sort of let up on the gas pedal and the car slows down, and you can brake if, you know, you need to. There is a brake pedal, but you sort of just let the car coast, similar to if you've ever driven a golf cart. You know, when you let up on the gas, the car just sort of brakes itself. It just sort of slows down. And that was all fine. You figured that out. You know, it took a little while. But the concern that I had, at least took me a little while, and I'm still not 100% sure because I couldn't check it, was when I take my foot off the gas pedal, and if I'm driving down the freeway, if I'm going somewhere at high speeds, and for some reason I slow down, whether there's traffic in front of me or I just feel like I'm going too fast, do the back brake lights come on? Because I want to be able to signal as quickly as possible to the people behind me that I am slowing down, hence I would like them to slow down. Right. So the same way that, you know, maybe if you're dealing with a technology that it's like, oh, I got to do something new, and I don't really know that new thing, do I feel uncomfortable? It was the same sort of feeling I had with this Tesla. It was, I don't know. I assume the back brake lights come on when I take my foot off the gas, but I'm not actually pushing the brake pedal. So do the brake lights come on? And again, it was just an uneasy feeling of being like, there's a lot of things maybe I don't understand sometimes when I get in a car. I don't know why the radio does what it does, or I don't know, you know, exactly where like the plug is for a USB, but like, I want to know if the brakes work. Like, I want to know if the gas pedal works, and I want to know if the brakes work, and I want to know if the mirrors work, because those are all things that are first level, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of safety kind of things. And Maslow's hierarchy doesn't have cars, but you get the point. And so the last thing, you know, as I was thinking about this and I was explaining the vehicle to my kids, and because they're all fascinated with the idea of electric cars, and, you know, I got to thinking about trying to explain things to them. And again, they weren't with me, so I was trying to explain it over the phone, was, you know, should I use comparisons? Should I use analogies? You know, oh, well, this is like this, or, well, you know, it sort of compares similar. And I think those things are useful to people. I think the thing you have to realize when you're using comparisons and analogies and stuff is, you want to find one that is relevant to their experience, is relevant to their world, right? I think oftentimes we find, as we're doing explanation of technology, is, you know, we find an analogy that works in our mind. We go, ah, this one's really good, and it doesn't sort of take you off on a weird tangent. It doesn't confuse anybody, all those sort of things. But then you also realize, like, oh, well, you know, like you can use an analogy. It's like, well, you can take a horse to water. Well, if somebody's never dealt with a horse, right? Or they've never, you know, if they've never done the thing you're talking about, that analogy might be great, but it's irrelevant. And so, you know, it did get me sort of thinking about, like, okay, you know, either my experience with the Tesla or my experience in presenting to people these technologies that may or may not get, you know, how far down the path of sort of simplicity and basics and analogy do I do? And how much do I sort of go, don't worry about that. It'll just sort of take care of itself, right? Or don't worry, it's not relevant to this new world. And it does get you thinking of like, okay, I don't want these people to, again, be confused. I don't want to belittle their knowledge. I don't want to dismiss their knowledge because, you know, their knowledge is relevant. It just may not be completely relevant in this world. And they're trying to make themselves more relevant in this world. Hence the reason why they gave you their time. And again, it was an interesting day. I thought a lot about it on the plane coming home, and it gave me a lot of kind of thought in terms of how I am going to plan to sort of do future interactions with different kinds of audiences and stuff. But it was different because I think anytime you do very incremental technology changes, you know, so like if anybody were to watch an Apple keynote these days, you know, the incremental changes that happen to an iPhone or the incremental changes that happen to a MacBook, pretty easy to understand. Yeah, there's some cool stuff and some other stuff you maybe sort of blah about, whatever. But when you make a leapfrog, like certain things, and you just sort of skip, you know, you go from one paradigm to a completely new one, I do really think you need to spend some time thinking about that checklist, right? The audience's experience, you know, do you have to explain the why of the technology? Do you have to explain the how of the technology? Do you have to understand and explain the value to people, especially if they don't necessarily have that experience? You know, how much time do you spend, you know, trying not to frustrate people, right? Like you want to make sure they understand things. You don't frustrate them because they may get frustrated and give up listening. And then how much do you, you know, what are the ways in which you try and bring them along from point A to point B to point C? And so anyways, it was an interesting day for me. I thought it'd be, you know, potentially interesting to the audience in terms of, you know, just kind of getting them thinking, because I know a lot of people that we work with or that listen to the show, you know, are involved with, you know, some level of change of technology, some maybe incremental and some maybe, you know, huge shifts. But, you know, especially if, you know, this is very much a know your audience, know their experience, know their expectations kind of thing. But it can definitely happen. And at those moments when it happens, you can either create really interesting situations and people are just sort of aha and wow, that's great. And you can also create very frustrating experiences for people. And the gray area between those things is very, very small, I think. So anyways, just something to think about. You know, I wanted to use those two examples that I had. I think that tends to work out sometimes in these Sunday perspective shows. But anyways, with that, I'm going to wrap it up. Hope everybody's had a great January. Thank you to everybody for listening. Thank you to everybody for obviously telling a friend, because we, like I mentioned, we're, you know, the listens, at least for the first month. And I don't know if that's a carryover from stuff from the last year, or maybe people just like the, you know, the look ahead shows, but numbers have been up about 30-ish, maybe sometimes a little bit more percent for the year. So it means a lot more new people have come along, and that's great. We are always interested in new people, and we're always interested in your ideas. So thank you to everybody who reaches out and gives us some ideas on guests and topics and stuff. So with that, I will wrap up, and we will talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to The Cloudcast. Please visit thecloudcast.net to find more shows, show notes, videos, and everything social media.